friends, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
This is Dan Friedell in for VOA's Sunny Young in Washington. Welcome to the Sunny Side of Sports. There are so many sporty things going on these days that I have to admit one upcoming event kind of sneaked by me. We've been talking about the NBA Finals between the Toronto Raptors and the Golden State Warriors, the NHL Stanley Cup Final between the Boston Bruins and the St. Louis Blues, and we've even been getting into the FIFA Women's World Cup going on in France. But Tiger Woods reminded us this week that he and the best golfers in the world are gathering in Northern California at the famed Pebble Beach course in gorgeous Monterey. The course is the site of one of Tiger Woods' most dominant wins in his career. All the way back in 2000, Woods won the U.S. Open by 15 strokes, besting South Africa's Ernie Els and Spain's Miguel Ángel Jiménez. Woods, of course, won the recent Masters tournament in Augusta, Georgia for his 15th overall major title. Now, Woods' issues with his body, his abuse of prescription painkillers, and his domestic problems have been well documented since then. But in a pre-tournament press conference on Tuesday, he joked, he just doesn't have the body he used to have in 2000, saying, I don't think any of us have the bodies we had 19 years ago, drawing laughter from the assembly of reporters. Woods, however, didn't have a problem remembering some of the big shots from the tournament almost 20 years ago.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's been 19 years. I still remember most of the shots I hit that week. It was just one of those weeks where I don't know how I pulled it off, but on Seaside Poana, I never missed a putt inside 10 feet for a week. I did the same thing at Torrey, too, so... it's been a while since we played the U.S. Open here, and there's nothing like playing a U.S. Open set up here at Pebble Beach. I mean, the golf course is not overly long. It's not, you know, big in that regard, but, man, it's tricky.
That's Tiger Woods talking about his U.S. Open win at California's Pebble Beach way back in 2000. As I mentioned, Woods has 15 major championships, second all time behind the legendary Jack Nicklaus, the Golden Bear, who has 18. At one point, it seemed like it was just a matter of time before Woods would get his 19th win, but it took him a number of years just to get from 14 to 15. Woods was asked whether besting Nicklaus's mark is still on his mind.
We spent a lot of time writing about your pursuit of Jack's record. I'm just wondering at this point in your life and career, how important that is to you.
What's important to me is that I'm back playing again. You know, this game was taken away from me for a few years there, and I miss competing, I miss playing. And now I have an opportunity to do that again. And also be able to share it with my kids. They don't remember me enjoying the game of golf because all they remember is daddy on the ground in pain. And so now golf brings me so much joy and they're able to see that. And I can be able to bring smiles to their faces while I'm bringing a smile to my own.
That's Tiger Woods, who's in Northern California along with the world's best golfers for this weekend's U.S. Open tournament at Pebble Beach. Now, just to get you up to speed, the defending U.S. Open champion is American Brooks Koepka. The tournament starts Friday and runs through the weekend. I'm Dan Friedell, and you're listening to The Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. One story we've been following for you this week on the show is the situation surrounding David Ortiz, the retired Major League Baseball player who was shot earlier this week in his home country of the Dominican Republic. Ortiz is one of Major League Baseball's best-known living players due to his effervescent smile and his contribution to the Boston Red Sox, who finally won the World Series after a many-decades-long drought in the first part of this century. Now, Ortiz has flown to Boston after he was stabilized in his home country and is currently resting after abdominal surgery at Boston's Massachusetts General Hospital. Matt Small of the Associated Press has this report on the investigation into who shot Ortiz.
A second person tied to Sunday's shooting, a former Red Sox slugger David Ortiz, has been arrested. But while there's no public indication the man is the suspected gunman, a spokeswoman for the National Prosecutor's Office in the Dominican Republic gave no further details. Ortiz is now recovering from exploratory surgery in Boston following surgery to remove his gallbladder and part of his intestine by Dominican doctors. At last word, his wife says he's stable, awake, and resting comfortably in the intensive care unit at Massachusetts General Hospital, where the 43-year-old is expected to remain for several days. I'm Matt Small.
Thanks, Matt. Now, the current Red Sox players are definitely concerned about their hero, David Ortiz, and one of the heroes of the team's run to the 2018 World Series championship, Jackie Bradley Jr., wrote on Twitter Tuesday, "Glad to know David Ortiz is up and walking around today. Keep on pushing. You have so much love and support. Now get bats back stronger so I can bear hug you, my brother." It's the sixth day of action at the Women's World Cup football tournament in France. Now, Tuesday saw Team USA, the defending champions, make its much-awaited debut against Thailand. While the American team was an overwhelming favorite against the small Asian nation, no one expected the goal differential to be quite as overwhelming as it was. The Americans won the match 13-0. Team USA was led by Alex Morgan, who scored in the 12th, 53rd, 74th, 81st, and 87th minutes. A pair of players, Rose Lavelle and Sam Mewis, scored two goals apiece. While American soccer fans celebrated their team's win, many onlookers wondered whether it was actually necessary for the Americans to keep scoring when the match was easily in hand. That, in fact, was the big sports conversation on Wednesday morning here in the U.S. USA coach Jill Ellis, however, defended her players, saying she wondered if a men's World Cup had a score of 10-0, any people would be saying that the winning team rubbed it in by continuing to score. Some people also criticized the American players for celebrating too much after scoring their goals. Now, veteran USA star, one of the top goal scorers in USA history, Abby Wambach, had this response on Twitter. She wrote, "For all that have issue with many goals, for some players, this is their first World Cup goal, and they should be excited. Imagine it being you out there. This is your dream of playing and then scoring in a World Cup. Celebrate. Would you tell a men's team to not score or celebrate?" The United States faces Chile in its next game. That comes on Sunday, June 16th. The Americans will wrap up the group stage against Sweden on June 20th. We'll have all the results from those games here on the Sunny Side of Sports. And in Wednesday's action, Nigeria's women defeated South Korea 2-0 to even their group stage record at one win and one loss. The Nigerians got on the board in the 29th minute, thanks to an own goal by Korea, and then expanded the lead in the 75th minute with a goal from Asisat Oshoala. The next match for Nigeria comes on June 17th against one of the tournament favorites, that's host country France. The Nigerian side will likely need a tie to hope to advance to the elimination stage of the tournament. Nigeria's loss came earlier to Norway, 3-0 on Saturday. Our friend Kwabena Quicksilver Ofori caught up with Norway's Emily Havi after that match. The Norwegians will play their second Group A match later on Wednesday against France.
It's a great start for us for the tournament, so we're very happy.
What about the Nigerians? How do you rate them?
Sorry?
How do you rate the Nigerian team?
They're a physical team. They have a lot of speed. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, they were good.
When you started the game from the 27 minutes, you hit the game and you scored some quick goals. How was the spirit coming from?
We have a lot of energy in our group, and I think we showed the rest that we are a good team. And it was good for us to bring a 3-0 to the break, so yeah, good start.
Then what happened in the second half? You couldn't add some more goals to it. What happened?
It's hard to say, but they had to score, so of course they pressed us. But yeah, we fight it and we won.
You have two more games to play with France and Korea. How are you going to take those seriously?
I think this game gave us a lot of energy, so we just have to keep going and perform as we did today.
What about the hope of qualifying to the next stage?
Our focus is on the next game, and that's France.
Thank you, Kwabena. That was Kwabena Quicksilver Ofori with Norway's Emily Havi. We look forward to hearing more from you as the tournament continues. The other match going on today is a European rivalry. That's Germany against Spain. I'm Dan Friedel in for Sonny Young, and you're listening to The Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. They're playing basketball. We love that basketball. When you hear that song on The Sunny Side of Sports, you know it's time to talk some hoops. And as our colleague Steve Miller got you caught up on the status of the series between Golden State and Toronto on Tuesday's show, we're going to get right into the discussion about Thursday's Game 6 back in the West in Oakland. If you haven't been following the business of sport here in the U.S., it's worth noting that win or lose, Thursday's game will be the last ever Warriors game on the Oakland side of the San Francisco Bay. The series' standout star, Kawhi Leonard of Toronto, was asked after Game 5 whether the pressure of trying to win the series on the road in Game 6 will be amplified, considering it'll be an emotional game for the fans who have spent decades watching the Warriors play in Oakland. After this season, the Warriors will be moving across the bridge to play in San Francisco at the newly built Chase Center. Here's what Kawhi had to say.
Just try to come out and match that emotion and that drive. You know, come out and do the same thing. Just be mentally focused, try to limit our mistakes, and be the aggressor. And just play hard 48 minutes and, you know, see what happens. Play confident.
That's Kawhi Leonard. And I'm Dan Friedel in for Sonny Young on The Sunny Side of Sports. We're now joined by VOA's Swahili service chief, Momoyo Hoops Hamza, who we've had the pleasure of talking basketball with all season, going way back to October. Welcome to the show, Momoyo.
Thank you, Dan.
So first off, let's talk about the point brought up by the reporter talking to Kawhi. Do you think the Raptors will feel any more pressure playing in the final ever game at Oracle Arena?
I don't think so. I don't think the venue matters to Toronto Raptors. That's something that Golden State Warriors have to worry about. That has been their home for many years. So playing their last game there, if it is the last game, it is the last game, you know, that would be more emotional to them. But for Toronto, all what matters for them is to get this win. It doesn't matter what the venue is.
So let's say that the Raptors win this series, Momoyo, either Thursday night in California or Game 7 back home in Toronto. Some people might say that the championship was diminished by the fact that Kevin Durant barely played. We only saw him on the floor for 12 minutes the other night, of course, making an impact before his injury. Klay Thompson missed a game. Kevon Looney has been hindered by injuries. So if somebody says this championship isn't really as valuable as another championship going up against the full-strength vaunted Warriors, do you think that would be true, or do you think this is a golden championship for Toronto if they wind up winning?
It won't be true, and this would be a very good, you know, a golden point, as you say, for Toronto Raptors. I mean, it happens all the time. Teams take advantage of injuries by other teams. Golden State Warriors have done that you know, so many times. In 2017, in the Western Conference Finals, Kawhi Leonard, then playing for San Antonio Spurs, got injured in a game that Spurs were leading. They were up by 25 points. He got injured. Golden State Warriors took that game, and they went on to win the series. Last season, playing in the Conference Finals again, against Houston Rockets, and Houston Rockets lost the point guard
Chris Paul. Yeah.
So and that turned everything around. So anytime there's an injury on the opposite team, you take advantage. You don't celebrate the fact that a player got injured, but you take advantage. And nobody will remember that Raptors won the championship if they do because KD was injured. Nobody will remember that in history.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. I mean, the Golden State Warriors still have plenty of weapons for this Game 6 and potential Game 7. Toronto has just been really impressive with their intensity, their secondary players beyond Kawhi Leonard. You have somebody like Pascal Siakam. You have Van Vliet. You have Serge Ibaka. You have this deep roster. Nick Nurse, who's kind of unknown as a coach, has shown that he's got the strength to manage this team. I remember hearing some conversation earlier in the playoffs where people were asking whether the Raptors needed to change anything in their series, for example, against Milwaukee. And they just said, we don't need to change anything. We're a great team. We just have to play better. I mean, I think that showed some of their confidence. Now, speaking of the confidence, Masai Ujiri, the general manager, the CEO, basically, of the Raptors, we talked about his move back in October, bringing in Kawhi Leonard, trading the beloved all-star DeMar DeRozan to the Spurs. So if Ujiri's move turns out to pay off with the title, what do you think that means for the Toronto fans? They've stuck with this team going back to their origin in 1995 when they won just 21 games, and all this disappointment in the Eastern Conference with the Raptors having a great regular season and then struggling in the playoffs during the LeBron era. What would a title mean to the Raptors and their fans?
It means a lot. And up to this point, Masai Ujiri has been brilliant. When he made the decision to let go of Dwayne Casey, who was Coach of the Year, and bring in Nick Nurse.
Yeah, that's a great point.
You know, that was, you know, everybody was like, oh, what is he doing? And bring in Kawhi Leonard. You see, so he made these very bold moves, which have turned out to be brilliant. Right now, this series, the finals, as it stands right now, Toronto Raptors seems to be actually a better team than Golden State Warriors. You know, a lot can happen. Golden State Warriors is a better team when they have KD. But without KD, you know, Raptors are obviously, you know, a better team. And anything, what happens tonight, which is likely to be the final game of the season, that will show and demonstrate that Masai Ujiri made a very brilliant move, and Toronto fans will be very happy. You know how it's the whole nation waiting for this championship. But hey, they still have a game to play and win tonight.
Right, tomorrow night. two chances to win the decisive game 4 of the 7-game series. Now, many of the people that are paying attention to the NBA might not remember that the team that's in Memphis, known as the Grizzlies, actually started in Vancouver, Canada. So that team moved back into the United States.
Yeah, those were two teams. When the expansion happened, Vancouver and Toronto Raptors, and then Vancouver Grizzlies moved back to the States.
Right, if some of our audience has been late coming to the NBA only in the last decade, they might have forgotten that there were actually two teams in Canada once upon a time. So, Moyo, I'll get you out with this one last question. There's two games at most remaining in the season. And, of course, it's been a long summer already. People are thinking about what are these teams going to look like next year when we're thinking about the preseason in October. So, first off, do you think Kawhi Leonard remains with Toronto if they win the title? And secondly, Kevin Durant's injury, it's clear that he's not going to come back. Do you think he'll stick with Golden State for another year of rehab, which would be his option, or will he move on to another team?
If Toronto Raptors win the championship, I think Raptors will do everything they can to keep Kawhi Leonard, because if they don't keep him, a repeat would be, you know, very difficult for them. So they need to keep him. As far as Kevin Durant is concerned, I think the Golden State Warriors, now, when he got injured the other day, everybody is blaming Golden State Warriors for putting him on the court. So they will also be in an emotional roller coaster. If they let him go, it's like they hurt him, they messed up his next season, and then they let him go. So I think they will try to do all they can to keep him through his rehabilitation. And if there's any trade, is they do it after next season.
Well, that's a great point. Thanks, Momoyo, for your analysis. It's always great to have you on the
anytime,
show.
Anytime.
So now another American sport is heading into its decisive Game 7 in Boston Wednesday night. That's tonight. The Stanley Cup Final. VOA intern Ryan Handel is here now to fill us in on the matchup on the ice. Welcome to the show, Ryan.
Thanks for having me, Dan. The St. Louis Blues face off tonight against the Boston Bruins in the deciding game of the NHL Stanley Cup Finals. After six hard-fought battles, the Blues and the Bruins are tied at three games apiece, setting up a Game 7 for all the marbles. Both teams have already had to survive a seven-game series in this year's playoffs. The Bruins were pushed to the brink by the Toronto Maple Leafs in the first round, and the Blues edged the Dallas Stars in the Western Conference semifinals. Now, the NHL's two top squads find their seasons on thin ice once again. This game will take place at TD Garden in Boston, making it appear that the Bruins have the advantage. But keep in mind that the home team is only 2-4 so far in this series. Boston is a squad with a strong history. They've won six Stanley Cups and made the finals 20 times, including this year. The Bruins will lead on Brad Marchand, who scored an impressive 100 points for Boston this year. In contrast to the Bruins, St. Louis is still searching for their first Stanley Cup. They failed to capitalize in each of their three previous trips to the finals. St. Louis will count on their leading scorer, Ryan O'Reilly, to lead them to victory. The Blues have overcome significant adversity this season. They fired their head coach earlier in their campaign, and at one point they had the NHL's worst record. Yet, they have recovered to make the Stanley Cup Finals. Tonight, in an all-important Game 7, we'll find out if the Blues can complete their miraculous turnaround.
Thanks, Ryan. Now, you mentioned that the home team in this series has had a hard time getting wins. Boston coach Bruce Cassidy addressed that issue.
No, I think both teams, to be honest, are good road teams. That has something to do with it. Game 7, I do believe if you're going to have home ice advantage, that is the game you want. And after that, like I said, it's two good hockey teams. I think they both have play good team defense and a certain style that lends itself to being successful on the road. That'd be my only, you know, opinion on that. We're glad to have home ice this game. St. Louis has bounced back all the time, so I'm sure they'll be comfortable. They're, 9-3 on the road, so they probably don't see it as a disadvantage at all.
So, Ryan, do you think the Bruins win it all tonight?
Well, as I mentioned, the Bruins have more postseason experience and home ice advantage. And in my opinion, they're the more talented team of the two. So even though I'd like to see the Blues cap off their wild season with the Stanley Cup, I've got to pick the Bruins.
So, Ryan, I'll go with St. Louis and we'll see what happens on tomorrow's show. Now, finally, Cassidy discussed what it's like to think about playing and coaching in Game 7. It's something he's thought about since he was a kid in Canada.
Coldry Avenue in the west end of Ottawa is where I played it growing up with my brother and lots of buddies. I said it before, I was like a lot of kids, Bobby Orr. If I didn't score in Game 7, we lost, we played it again. That's the way it went, right? I never imagined myself as a kid coaching it. I'm not going to lie to you. It was as a player. But here I am. It's the next best thing. So that's where it was for me. In the middle of winter, in the middle of summer, didn't matter. On the street, you know, our street would freeze over. Not frozen all winter, don't get me wrong. But when it snowed and sleet, it would stay frozen for a bit. So either with a sponge puck or a tennis ball was one or the other. Coldry Avenue, C-O-L-D-R-E-Y. I remember it well. I was there for a long time.
That's Boston coach Bruce Cassidy talking about Stanley Cup Game 7 coming up Wednesday night in Boston. And that wraps up the June 12th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger. Thanks also to VOA engineer Patrick Dea. And thank you for tuning in. I'm Dan Friedel, happily filling in for VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. And that's the Sunny Side of Sports.
I get it.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, the CEOs of Kenya and South African Airways have announced their resignations. Does this signal a lack of progress for African airlines? Africa's airline woes on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, Africa. This is James Barty, host of Daybreak Africa, inviting you to join me every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC as we bring you the latest in African news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our listener mail segment by sending your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. You can also call us and leave us a voicemail at 202-205-9942. That's 202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. Start your day with Daybreak Africa every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC on the Voice of America.
Are you suffering from heartache? No problem. We've got the cure for you. The African beat can soothe your heartache with its awesome tunes from the African continent. So join me, David Vandy, Mondays through Fridays at 0900 and 2000 Universal Time for a healing journey. I guarantee it.
This is Science in a Minute.
A recent study details the discovery of what its authors describe as a mysterious large mass of materials hundreds of kilometers beneath the moon's South Pole Aitken Basin. The study suggests that the large mass may contain metal from an asteroid that smashed into the far side of the moon about 4 billion years ago, forming the crater. Study lead author Peter James, a professor at Baylor University, Texas, said the size of the mystery mass is like a pile of metal 5 times larger than the Big Island of Hawaii. The South Pole Aitken Basin itself is about 2,500 kilometers wide, roughly 13 kilometers deep, and is said to be the largest preserved crater in the solar system. The study authors say another possible source of the large mass may be a concentration of dense oxides left over from the last stage of lunar magma ocean solidification. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Thanks for listening to Border Crossings with Larry London. We're honoring Avicii, one of EDM's greatest producers, who tragically passed away last year, with a month-long giveaway of his new album, Tim. The album includes vocals from many prominent artists, including Chris Martin and more. Tune in at 1500 Universal every weekday in June for your chance to win a free copy of Tim. Anyone who makes a request has a chance to win.
Border Crossings!
VOA's Learning English is available online at learningenglish.voanews.com. Check out our programs such as Let's Learn English, English in a Minute, Everyday Grammar, and many more. VOA's Learning English, your reliable source for learning English.
Voice of America's flagship global news program, International Edition, brings you an in-depth look at the biggest stories of the day. Nobody covers the world more comprehensively than VOA. We have hundreds of reporters gathering the news and the views of the most seasoned experts on international issues. Tune in Monday through Friday at 17 UTC and 2230 UTC. We're also available online at voanews.com.
We are always glad to have our listeners throughout Africa tuning in to our newscasts, covering African news. Tune in on top of each hour, 24/7. VOA is your trusted source of news and information.
This is VOA News. I'm David Byrd. A massive demonstration outside the headquarters of Hong Kong's government turned violent Wednesday as